Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Relevant and engaging content designed to help you dominate the day.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Knife. This is Jason here. If you're prepping for the complex general surgical oncology boards or just looking to level up your surge onc game, you need to check out our surgical oncology board review. This isn't some lame review with just flashcards and outlines. We've created comprehensive high-yield scenarios covering the most tested diseases, plus expert commentary and updated guidelines that actually stick and are proven to help you pass the boards. Breast, pancreas, sarcoma, you name it, we've got you covered. Available on our app, so you can review anytime, anywhere. Group discounts are available. Enjoy the episode and dominate the day.
Welcome to a new Behind the Knife mini-series on the operative standards for cancer surgery. This series will focus on the technical aspects behind these operative standards. The standards were developed through the American College of Surgeons Cancer Research Program and are concrete, evidence-based recommendations on cancer surgery techniques critical to achieving optimal oncologic outcomes. Currently, there are three volumes that cover 15 disease sites, and these are linked to in our show notes. Dr. Freeland and I are on the Education Committee for Cancer Surgery Standards Program, and today we'll discuss the colon cancer standard with Dr. George Chang. Dr. Chang is a professor and the current department chair of the Department of Colon and Rectal Surgery at MD Anderson Cancer Center. He was also the co-chair with Dr. Amy Halverson of the team developing the colon standards for the Operative Standards of Cancer Surgery Volume 1.
So, Dr. Chang, thank you very much for being with us tonight. Welcome to the show, our first episode on the technical aspects of these cancer standards. So we're very excited to discuss the technical aspects of a colectomy tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much. It's really a pleasure to be here, and thanks for asking me to come and participate.
So, Dr. Chang, can you please share some background on the manuals and how the decisions were made about which standard should be included?
Yeah, thanks, Lexi. The operative standards manuals for all the diseases were really designed to distill down the critical elements of oncologic surgery for the various different tumor types. And really the goal was to be able to succinctly outline the major steps to ensure that we achieve a proper oncologic resection. And it was developed really by bringing together several experts and then iteratively going through a process that identified those critical elements. And in fact, we call it critical elements. In this process, we also identified some key questions, areas where there's potential controversy or areas where, you know, further exploration may be helpful. And so we've outlined some of them in the manual as well.
Yeah, that's very helpful. And, you know, obviously we'll put links to the manuals in the show notes for this episode. And we certainly encourage all trainees and even junior surgeons who are attendings to look through the manual. So for the colon cancer elements specifically, so you guys laid out the critical elements to be abdominal exploration, the extent of bowel mobilization, resection, proximal vascular ligation and regional lymphadenectomy, multivisceral resection, and removal of lymphadenopathy beyond the primary distribution. You know, for our time this evening, I think I really want to focus on the extent of resection and the primary vascular ligation. I know when I saw you operate, those were the things that really changed my practice, is, you know, learning in general surgery how to take a right colon out versus learning how to really get in the proximal vasculature. So I think it's a great place for us to focus. So why don't we start with the extent of bowel mobilization resection? So you can run through some of the obvious scenarios, but, you know, getting your opinion on the more complex, on the flexures and cancers that happen in those locations.
Yeah, thanks. I think this is probably one of the areas where we kind of take it for granted. You know, we learn, well, we have a right colectomy or we have a sigmoid colectomy without really thinking through what is the operation and why are we doing it? And it really goes hand in hand in thinking about how we handle the vascular ligation, because the point of that, obviously, is to perform a complete lymphadenectomy appropriate to the location of the tumor. So when we think about the extent of resection in terms of the bowel, it really is based upon the location of the tumor and its feeding blood supply. The lymphatic drainage follows the feeding blood supply, and the definition of a complete oncologic resection is one that we have resection of the tumor along with the margin and all of its regional lymph nodes. So let's take, for example, a tumor that's located within the cecum. Its primary drainage is going to be through the ileocolic vessel. In patients in whom a right colic artery is present, which, as you know, there's a lot of variation in that anatomy, and it is not always present as a separate vessel off of the superior mesenteric artery. So for a tumor located in the cecum, then the appropriate resection is the ileocolic pedicle and plus or minus the right branch of the middle colic. When we have a tumor located a little bit further down the colon, such as the ascending colon, then that is clearly in between the distribution of the middle colic and the ileocolic. There, the resection should include the ileocolic and at the least the right branch of the middle colic distribution. Then by definition, that means that the extent of colonic resection is one that accounts for that vascular distribution. So the extent of colonic resection is really defined by which vessels are being ligated. And so that helps us to then think about what is the sort of the right operation or the extent of resection. So we kind of generically refer to all of these as right colectomy. But really, how we think about how much bowel we resect and what part of the colon is defined by the vascular anatomy in that way. So this is why a tumor in the hepatic flexure, which gets drained, which has sort of, or let's go a little further over, in the transverse colon closer to the hepatic flexure, that is why that is actually at the apex or to the left side of the right branch of the middle, which means that we need to do an extended right colectomy, or an extended right colectomy means we are taking the ileocolic as well as the origin or the trunk of the middle colic, because that allows us now to get the complete distribution. While there are some people who may argue that it is not appropriate to do simply a transverse colectomy because of a variety of concerns, including the residual blood supply or anastomotic integrity, taking these principles, it means that if we have a mid-transverse colon tumor, then the distribution we need is the middle colic at its origin. And then we can put the two sides of the colon back together. Tumors of the splenic flexure are handled in a similar fashion. We need the ascending left colic artery, which derives its origin from the inferior mesenteric artery, and the left branch at least, if not the entire middle colic trunk, depending on exactly where that tumor is located. So with relations to the vessel. So if a tumor is a little more distal in the splenic flexure, then it will be between those the left branch and the left colic. And if it's more proximal, it will include potential drainage through the right branch of the middle. Therefore, the entire trunk should be taken. So this is the approach that we would that the operative standards advocates for or demonstrates, which is that we have to visualize that anatomy and then use that anatomy to determine what bowel gets resected. So hopefully that kind of helps to clarify.
I do wonder about that. So, you know, a lot of people push that, you know, if you take that middle colic, you should do an extended right. Your practice is to preserve the right colon. And when you do that, you know, you're doing these all, I assume, MIS, you know, you're doing that sort of side-to-side anastomosis and creating that awkward mesenteric window. Do you have any advice kind of on how you handle that typically?
Yeah, I agree. It's totally awkward, which is why I never do a side-to-side colocolostomy. So if it's a colocolonic anastomosis, I always do that as an end-to-end.
Okay.
Because I think it's just, you know, it's just very weird, that anatomy. Now, having said that, there's plenty of people who do that as a side-to-side. Mm-hmm. It's just, I think it puts more tension on the intersection and all of that. It's just not a natural lay of the bowel for me. And so I think part of the rationale for an extended right is that ileocolic to the descending colon is a simpler anastomosis as well. It's just we lose the ileocecal valve, we lose more colon. Most people tolerate that pretty well, but is it necessary? I don't think so. And if you are in Japan, as an example, or Korea, transverse colectomies get done all the time because it is based on these it's based on the anatomic principles of 10 centimeter margin on the bowel and then the vascular distribution.
Mm-hmm. What about a scenario where you're not super confident exactly where the tumor is?
Yeah.
You know, the colonoscopy says it's near the flexure, or, you know, it's in the transverse colon and there's like kind of tattoo all over and it's just not totally clear. How do you handle that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, ideally you've done everything you can to localize. If there's tattoo, hopefully we know if it's tattoo proximal or distal to the tumor. If not, sometimes there's a clip and an x-ray that might help you. So that's another way to localize. We're really talking about small tumors because anything of substance you'll be able to see on the imaging. And so I think it's really critical to study the imaging before going into surgery so that you know. And when you study the imaging, it's not just about finding the tumor within the longitudinal anatomy of the colon. It's really about finding the tumor and the vascular anatomy to that part of the colon. So then you know and can plan the operation. So there is a tremendous variation in the vascular anatomy. And so, you know, it's important. So let's just take that junction between the descending colon and sigmoid colon as an example. It's quite possible, depending on the anatomy, that that tumor maybe is just a little further down the sigmoid. So let's just say that tumor is entirely in the distribution of, you know, what the vessel that some people regard either as the first sigmoidal or the descending left colic artery. But in any case, it's that vessel that is entirely has its distribution from the superior rectal artery. You know, if it were located there and you couldn't be 100% sure, then the solution would be to resect the distribution of the inferior mesenteric artery. And then you could bring the descending colon down and do your anastomosis. That would be the, and on this side, and of course, you know, the key principle is ensuring adequate blood supply. By observing the principles of resecting the distribution of the blood supply, the resecting the distribution of the lymphatic drainage associated with that tumor, we will ensure that we have adequate blood supply to our anastomosis. But you all know, in situations like rectal cancer, we often ligate blood supply and depend upon the marginal vessel to provide that supply to our conduit for the reconstruction. So the point I'm trying to make is the first principle is understand the vascular anatomy. The bowel extent is dependent upon tumor location with relationship to that vascular anatomy, but it's not like, okay, there's only one place that we can ligate it. We want to ensure that there's adequate margin on the bowel, ideally 5 to 10 centimeters. We want to ensure that we've removed all the lymph nodes associated with that part of the bowel. And then we want to ensure that there's an adequate blood supply to the bowel we're putting back together. And generally speaking, if we observe these principles, then the bowel will be well vascularized, right? Using the vascular anatomy as the guide, you know, to the extent of resection. So hopefully that helps.
All right. So can you walk us through your technical steps of how you would perform a right colectomy, say for a mass in the ascending colon?
Yeah. So again, if we go back to the principles that we outlined in the operative standards, our goal, now that we've defined which vessels we need to identify, and we've defined what part of the bowel will be resected. Now we have to think about, okay, where do we perform, or how do we perform the resection? Where do we perform our vascular ligation? So within the operative standards, this is one of the key critical elements that we emphasize, which is proximal vascular ligation. What that means is that the lymphatic drainage of the tumor within the bowel goes along the arterial supply, and we want to get to the origin of that arterial supply. So for a tumor in the ascending colon, that means, you know, we need to, one of the primary feeding vessels is the ileocolic artery, and we would want to ligate that at its origin from the superior mesenteric artery or very close to that site. There's significant variation in the anatomy. About not quite half the time it runs anterior. A little bit more than half the time, it runs posterior to the superior mesenteric vein. So it's not to say you have to then mobilize the superior mesenteric vein completely and get to that origin at the SMA. The ideal location for ligation of all of these vessels is just on the right side of the SMV. If we did that, we would be doing a complete lymphadenectomy, what in the Japanese guidelines would be referred to as a D2 lymphadenectomy. That is an increasingly more utilized terminology, the concept of D1, D2, and D3 lymphadenectomy. But a complete D2 lymphadenectomy or a complete resection of the mesentery for the involved segment of the bowel will ensure that we have a complete oncologic resection. We would also then, in an ascending colon tumor, want to identify, is there a right colic artery? And that should be ligated in a similar way. And if not present, the next vessel then is the right branch of the middle colic artery. And of course, if it's in the ascending colon, we'd have to look at that right colic distribution. Probably the safe approach is to also resect the origin, the right branch of the middle colic artery. And that would then ensure that we have complete resection of all of the lymphatic drainage. The principle again being the primary feeding vessels, and then the level of ligation being the origin of that vessel.
I know it's a little difficult without visual prompts, but can you talk through how you actually find those vessels? Are you're doing your vascular ligation very early in the case? How are you finding the origin? Are you tracking the ileocolic vein back to the SMB? How much of the SMB do you clear off? And how do you find that middle colic?
Well, so first, the first step is really to identify that ileocolic pedicle. And we can do that with a little traction on the mesentery towards the cecum. But in reality, you can actually identify, you often can see it even in an obese patient as being sort of a prominence within that mesentery. Our goal is to identify that plane, that avascular plane behind the ascending mesocolon. So we'll incise the peritoneum and lift up on the mesentery. And if we are in the right spot, we will start to see that areolar plane. We'll get that air dissection. If we're too distal on the mesentery, that is overlying the ileocolic vessel, then we will not see that. So that's kind of the first cue. But then before really getting the vessel out, we'll take our incision across transversely over the SMV and towards the SMA. Why do we do that? There are no anterior branches of the SMA or SMV. So it is a very safe plane. And so our goal is to first identify the superior mesenteric vein. The principle is we want proximal ligation and we want complete lymphadenectomy. The most sort of assured approach to do that is to utilize anatomy, that anatomic landmarks that we can all identify readily. And so by dissecting through this tissue, we can readily identify then the superior mesenteric vein. So we can, we can dissect through, even in obese patients, this adipose tissue. Once we identify the SMV, now we've got a safe plane, because we can now work along that anterior SMV plane. So the peritoneum then gets incised towards the more proximal SMV, so towards the base or the root of the transverse mesocolon. We do that by putting some traction on the mesentery of the transverse colon and elevating that cephalad. That allows us, now that we've identified where the SMV is, to follow up that plane by incising the peritoneum in that direction, and then exposing the anterior surface of the SMV. In so doing, then we can identify all the vessels, the tributaries to the SMV, and then the branches of the SMA as well. It is very helpful to study the imaging so that you know if you have an ileocolic artery that is anterior or posterior to the SMV. So you should definitely plan to, anytime you do any kind of cancer surgery, we should all be students of the imaging, right? And study the anatomy so that we know what we're doing. And again, we didn't discuss the first step being mobilization of the bowel. We discussed the first step being actually identifying the vascular anatomy. And I think that's really critical, because that helps us then to sort of, be rooted and focused in these oncologic principles and ensuring the completeness of the resection. So once we've done that, then we've identified the SMV. That means we know now where the ileocolic pedicle is going to be. We can elevate that ileocolic pedicle. And what I'm really describing now is sort of a minimally invasive approach, right? In an open approach, we would do similar principles, but the sequence might be a little bit different. But once we've now got the ileocolic pedicle elevated, we can isolate now the ileocolic artery and the vein just on the right side of the SMV. and then ligate that. Now it's a matter of following along that SMV, really taking everything to the right side of the SMV and including it so that we have an intact mesenteric envelope that we resect, and we have completely resected. And this will then take us, if there's a right colic artery, we'll see it. The next vessel we'll identify following this plane of dissection is going to be the gastrocolic trunk. The gastrocolic trunk is the tributary that comes draining the pancreas and the duodenum and the right colon into the SMV, and as well as the gastroepiploid vein, right? They all come together to the gastrocolic trunk, sometimes called the gastrocolic trunk of Henle. So at that level, what we want to do is identify the superior right colic vein. That superior right colic vein drains into the gastrocolic trunk just distal to the superior pancreatic or duodenal vein. So you can tell where that is because that vein's heading down towards the pancreas and duodenum, and then there is this vein draining in from the ascending mesocolon. We've identified that because we've done some dissection of the mesentery, the retromesenteric plane or Tulp's plane behind the ascending mesocolon anterior to the duodenal, second portion of the duodenum and the head of the pancreas, right? We've done all of that. So we've elevated that mesentery and we're looking at the undersurface of the ascending mesocolic plane, fascial plane. So then we can see where that superior right colic vein is coming. So that vein is ligated there. And now that allows us to have essentially complete detachment of all of the blood supply to that right side of the colon. The next vessel left then is the middle colic artery. And because we're coming up along the SMV, which is just adjacent to the SMA, we can identify then the origin of the middle colic, because as we come up to the base of the transverse mesocolon, now our plane of operation is now going to be away from the retroperitoneum, right? Because we've elevated the transverse mesocolon. Now, the middle colic artery is not a mesenteric structure. And what I mean by that is the middle colic origin, it can be considered in some ways a retroperitoneal structure. What I mean by that is it doesn't have a peritonealized mesentery typically on both sides, right? It does by the time it bifurcates and gives us a left and the right branch, but the origin itself is actually within that, you know, perivascular sort of adipose tissue. So that makes it kind of, in most cases, it makes it kind of tricky to identify. So if we follow this and then follow this up along the SMV plane, and now we can start incising the peritoneum overlying the root of the transverse mesocolon, then the middle colic artery and its branches gets readily identified. So when you identify it, then we can follow it in one direction or the other to identify the left branch. Now then, if you have a good CT scan, you can often see like how far along the middle colic artery as it originates from the SMA does it bifurcate. Not always possible to tell. Super skinny patients, much harder to tell, right? You have to have a little bit of adipose tissue to help you with this. But I think in general principle, what we now want to see is where is this vessel heading on the transverse colon? You'll see one that goes to the left, often that comes off relatively proximally, and one that goes more to the right. And that's the one we want to ligate at that level. Once you've done this and sort of connected, we should be able to sort of be in that fused lesser sac plane. That's that fused plane on the right, towards the right side of the lesser sac, right, where the transverse mesocolon is kind of fused, as opposed to the left side where we have a very clear lesser sac. But once we've done that mobilization, we'll be able to readily identify that from the cephaloid aspect of the hepatocolic ligament and then complete our mobilization that way. So that's kind of how we identify the vessels, which is look at the originating vessels as a way of helping us to find the origin of the primary feeding vessel and ligate that. There is some controversy as to, you know, what defines a complete lymphadenectomy. And I think this is now where we get into some of the controversy around D2 versus D3 versus central vascular ligation, complete mesocolic excision. So I think the principles are we want a complete mesenteric envelope. So that can be considered a complete mesocolic excision, right? If we have that envelope. But that often goes hand in hand with a complete lymphadenectomy, which some people would advocate includes the lymph nodes on the SMV, and some people, fewer people than still, but still would advocate along the SMA as well. If there is some controversy as to what is true D3 lymph node dissection, but anything to the patient's left-hand side of the right side of the vein is the D3 distribution, right? So if we have exposed the SMV, we have removed some D3 level lymph nodes, but really the goal here is to ensure that we have a complete D2 dissection. So if we ligate on the right side, the reason we take the approach that we do is that it actually is harder to know when you're at the origin of the vessel, and in some ways, potentially more dangerous because you haven't identified the anatomy, right? So we're trying to ligate it where we can't see where the dangerous anatomy is. But if we have identified the SMV, follow the principle that there are no anterior branches, therefore, if we're on that perivascular plane, it is a very safe plane, then we can very safely do those ligations. I will just parenthetically say there are people out there who think that we will end up killing patients or really hurting patients with too much emphasis on some of what I've described. The main concern is along the gastrocolic trunk. That is probably the area of most unfamiliarity. When I was in training, we learned that as tiger country. And the reality is that is probably one of the most critical, areas to address. I don't know how we get through that, in sort of US surgical training, but I do think that as we think through some of this and sort of highlighting that, the importance of really kind of, being attentive to the anatomy as we embark upon, these operations, I think will be key, because that's how we keep, people more safe. Like, I think the reason why there's risk of hurting people is people sort of hear the CME concept and they try to do it without understanding the anatomy. And I think they will cite the higher rate of vascular injury in the RELARC trial. And there was an early mortality in the Copenhagen data that really is probably the best real world observational data. And that early mortality probably was due to some risk for operative complications. So in the learning curve, these are legitimate concerns.
So a couple of questions. I think some people worry that when they get really far over to the patient left, that they could accidentally ligate the SMA. So yes. What are your tricks to make sure that you have the iliacolic pedicle and not the whole SMA and SMB dissected out? Do you dissect distal to the iliacolic coming off to make sure? And then obviously the relationship with the duodenum can be helpful.
Yeah, thanks. So it's a good question. The SMA lives generally to the left of the SMV or posterior and left of the SMV. So one can end up injuring it if they're pulling too much rightward lateral traction on the tissue, on the pedicle, right? You can pull it over. So I do think that is a potential risk. But again, I go back to the principle, if we've exposed the vein, we've released some of those tissues, allows the artery to fall back over. And then we want to make sure that there should be a very clear branch coming off of that. So if we're not seeing sort of let's take the iliacolic as an example. If we're not seeing an artery, a major artery going distal further away after we've isolated the iliacolic, then you have to ask yourself, is this the SMA? Another trick, and this is available whether you're doing robotic or laparoscopic or even open surgery, is that you can do an intraoperative arteriogram with ICG. And so if you do fluorescence imaging, so you can inject some indocyanine green, and then watch the artery fill. And as you do that, you have real-time arteriography. So that is a useful adjunct that we use quite a bit in reoperative surgery. And where, unfortunately, in fact, just yesterday, we were doing an operation where there was tumor that was in a retained vascular stump, right? So the ligation was performed, just not proximal enough. And so there was a short segment of the residual middle colic vessel. And those are the tumors that end up invading the pancreatic head or the duodenum, et cetera, right? And become real management problems. And so we can use ICG arteriography so the principle is still the same. First, we identified in this case, and we can do this minimally invasively, the SMV, and then identify the arterial anatomy to help clarify the anatomy by using ICG, you know, once we start exposing some of the vessels. Both of these techniques, using the SMV, we call it the SMV first technique, as well as, you know, using ICG and utilizing the SMV to help us with salvage surgery, are, have been published and they're by our group, and their videos available for people who are interested. Should everybody be trying to do this kind of surgery, or is this an expectation? I don't think so, right? You know, I think what it kind of points to, though, are the key principles. And the key principle is we want to make sure that we're ligating the vessel at its origin so that we complete that lymphadenectomy. While most lymph node metastases will be pericolic, right, in that first echelon close to the colon, there are not an insignificant number, probably upwards of 25%, that occur between that first echelon and the feeding vessel origin, right? That's what we want to completely resect. And that's what we miss with sort of quote unquote conventional surgery that hasn't identified the origin. The incidence of lymph node metastasis on the primary root vessels, so-called N3 in the Japanese literature, or the central lymph node metastases, these occur somewhere in the 3 to 6 or 7% range, and the vast majority of them can be identified on preoperative imaging. So we would plan our operation, if there's adenopathy there that is concerning, then plan that resection, you know, at the time of surgery. But in the absence of that, it is a complete resection as long as we, you know, do that ligation at the origin on the and essentially on the right hand side of that SMV. That defines really the origin of the feeding vessels on the right. On the left, you know, we define the origin of the feeding vessel as either the IMA or the superior rectal artery or the left colic artery, depending on where the tumor is located.
Can you discuss, you briefly did, but discuss the data specifically for right? You know, I think people are more aware of the data for left. You know, the recommendation here is moderate. The strength of evidence, you know, is not, you know, these aren't randomized controlled trials. So what's your best argument for the surgeon who doesn't think they need to do this to convince them to do it? Is it, you know, that percentage of patients that are going to recur in those nodes? Do you think it affects overall survival? And if so, why do you think that?
Yeah, well, I think the principle behind, you know, unresected disease will lead to recurrence, right? That's just by definition. So we resect hepatic metastases, you know, as a curative intent operation. And we should have the same approach to handling the primary tumor. Actually, we, in order to do a curative intent operation, all of the regional lymph nodes, so the lymphadenectomy should be complete for the regional distribution. The bowel, of course, right? And in fact, the bowel resection should be complete. If it involves an adjacent organ, we need to resect all of that en bloc. You know, it is a same general concept. Now, there is some literature regarding so-called complete mesocolic excision that does include a more extended lymph node dissection to conventional surgery, which is not defined, right? Conventional surgery, not defined, meaning that doesn't mean conventional surgery is the same as D2 lymphadenectomy, a complete D2, right? Because very often in conventional surgery, there's no standardization of that operation. That's what these operative standards are designed to help promote, is standardization of what we would say is sort of the standard, you know, conventional surgery. And so in studies, of course, you can't randomize patients to conventional surgery versus sort of this extended lymphadenectomy or a complete mesocolic excision, which I would argue doesn't necessarily mean even an extended lymphadenectomy. When we say extended lymphadenectomy, it can start to sound like more aggressive surgery than necessary. I would simply call it complete surgery. But there is some retrospective observational data that clearly demonstrates a survival advantage, both in terms of decreased risk of recurrence and better survival. Now, this is not without some potential risk. So there is potential risk for vascular injury if you don't have proper training. So in Europe, actually, there are a number of programs designed to train surgeons on how to do this operation. In Asia, the right colectomy, which is relegated to the most junior operators in the US, is regarded as senior operator operation because of that vascular anatomy and the importance of handling that. In China, recently was completed a randomized trial that compared complete mesocolic excision with central vascular ligation to D2 lymphadenectomy, randomization by the same surgeon. You could argue then, if the same surgeon was performing both operations, that they did indeed have a complete D2 lymphadenectomy, right? And so now that's a reasonable comparison. So in this randomized study, there was a slightly higher rate of vascular injury in the extended lymphadenectomy group. Now, remember, the control arm was a complete D2. This is what we would say is the complete operation. And there was no signal of an advantage of the more radical or extended lymphadenectomy, but the long-term outcomes, you know, are awaited. I will tell you parenthetically, there was no benefit in long-term results, but in a certain subgroup, there was an advantage, and it was the stage three patients.
And that would be clearing out all the lymphatic tissue in front of and behind the SMB all the way over to the SMA, the extended.
So this is the RELARC study, and they are currently reporting their long-term primary outcomes. And it one of the controversies of this study is they defined the experimental arm, which is the extended resection arm, as lymphadenectomy to the anterior aspect of the SMA. Mm-hmm. So quite far over.
Yeah.
And so remember we said the risk of lymph node metastasis to these root nodes is less than 5 to 7%. So, and arguably some of these root node metastases, if they're occurring kind of on the rightward of the SMB, we might identify and get them with a good D2. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's certainly quite controversial whether or not we need to be that far over. I think the approach that I described earlier was really an approach to ensure that we have a complete D2 lymphadenectomy, and we, in the process, will have, you know, some of the D3 level lymph nodes as well. Some people would argue exposure of the SMB constitutes a complete D3 lymph node dissection. Even the Japanese, I would argue that even the Japanese guidelines or people who are involved in the guidelines probably wouldn't have consensus on whether you need SMA or SMV is enough.
And just to be clear, you know, a lot of these things that we've been discussing are, you know, the MD Anderson and Dr. Chang approach. The standard says, you know, proximal vascular ligation at the origin of the primary feeding vessel. How do you understand those terms? Do you think that if you take the artery at the right side of the SMV without necessarily exposing the anterior surface, that still would meet, you know, what you guys described in the textbook when you were in the room coming up with that wording?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, the idea is to get to the origin, here's where we think the origin is, because often you can't identify that unless you've seen the anatomy clearly, right? So the concept is get to the origin. Our approach to utilize SMV is so that we can have a very clear view of those structures, right? It is our way, but there are other ways to achieve the same thing. But this is the way that we've identified to ensure that we have not only a complete resection, but that the resected specimen is intact. As you know, there is a grading system for even that mesentery. We don't want any holes in it. We don't want, just like there's a grading system for rectal resections, there's a grading system for colon resections. And while that has not gained as much traction as the grading system for rectal resections, a so-called TME completeness, there is a CME completeness, or mesocolic, you know, envelope completeness grade. And again, the same principles, we want to ensure that we're not exposing the muscularis in the area of the tumor, and that we have that investing envelope is intact.
Well, that was fantastic.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chang. This is a complicated topic, and we appreciate you talking us through some of these complex operative steps to help us meet these cancer surgery standards.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And thank you all so much for highlighting these issues. I think, you know, highlighting these issues will improve outcomes for cancer patients across the country. You know, a high quality operation will do more to improve survival than any adjuvant therapy that we can give. And thanks for inviting me.
To our audience, thank you again for joining us for our first episode in this series about the operative standards of cancer surgery. Stay tuned for future episodes on the pancreas, melanoma, breast, and other disease sites to come. Thank you.
Be sure to check out our website at www.behindtheknife.org. Download our free app available for Apple iOS and Android. Simply search for Behind the Knife in the App Store or Google Play to download the app. In the app, you can listen to our episodes, watch high-yield videos, and even access our premium content, including our oral board reviews and trauma video atlas. You can also follow us on Twitter at Behind the Knife and on Instagram at Behind the Knife Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to leave us a review. Content produced by Behind the Knife is intended for health professionals and is for educational purposes only. We do not diagnose, treat, or offer patient-specific advice. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support.
Until next time, dominate the day.